We're talking now with Luke Mayville. He is co-founder and director of Reclaim Idaho, which is a grassroots movement of people around the state that are working on different issues. Luke, thank you for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Chris. When we started in Sandpoint a couple of years ago, your show is the first show we ever appeared on. So it's always good to be back and get back to our roots.
Hey, a little bit of history right there.
Yep.
So the big news that came down just this week is that the Idaho Supreme Court struck down the law passed by the Idaho legislature this spring that net effect made the initiative process in our state much more restrictive. And that was a result of a lawsuit brought by Reclaim Idaho challenging the new law as unconstitutional. I tell you what, we want to talk about that, but for those who aren't necessarily up to speed, can you describe, you know, what it is an initiative and how does that process work in Idaho, or at least work prior to the passage of this new law?
Well, the initiative process has been part of the Idaho Constitution ever since 1912, when the people of Idaho voted by a very large majority to create the initiative process. And it's really a proud tradition in Idaho, unlike in other states where the initiative process has, you know, you might say the initiative process has been abused. Here in Idaho, it's rarely ever been used. And when it is used, it's to address major problems of public concern. That's been the overwhelming pattern. So things like, you know, the Fish and Game Department was created by the initiative process. There's a sunshine law that looks after, you know, campaign finance and you know, regulates against political corruption. And that was created by initiative process. The homeowner's tax exemption was created by an initiative. So all of these things, and most recently, the initiative that we organized for, the Medicaid Expansion Initiative, that was also part of that process. When citizens come together and collect signatures from 6% of the voters in the state, which is a really large number of signatures, and when they fulfill the other, you know, when they meet all the other rules and requirements, which we could talk more about, citizens can put a law directly on the ballot, and then voters in turn can decide whether to vote for that law or against that law. And if they vote for it, it actually becomes an official law. So it's really an example of citizen lawmaking, where citizens take the political process into their own hands, usually when their legislature does not want to act on an issue, and citizens can create their own law. So that's what the initiative process is all about here in Idaho.
And what has the threshold been to get an initiative placed on the ballot?
For most of Idaho history, it's been that you need signatures from 6% of voters statewide. Which, you know, that number grows as the number of voters grows. But to give you a sense, this year that's about 65,000 signatures. And they can't just be like sloppy, you know, line on a paper. They have to be valid signatures, meaning they have to you have to legibly write your name and sign together with an address where you're registered to vote. So if you mistake any of those parts of it, your signature gets struck out, which means that generally, in order to collect 65,000 valid signatures, you've got to collect about 100,000 or maybe 80,000 to 100,000, you know, signatures to get over that threshold. So it's a lot of work, an incredible amount of work, all the way up and pretty much unchanged. There's a few small little things, but pretty much unchanged all the way from the 1930s through the year 2013. That was the basic rule. You needed valid signatures from 6% of the voters. In 2013, it got a lot tougher, a whole lot harder, because the legislature came in and said, We actually think the process is too easy. What we're going to require, you know, campaigns to do is collect signatures, not just from 6% of the voters, but also from 6% of voters in 18 different districts around the state. But that's one thing that people need to understand. This whole idea of requiring certain numbers of signatures from different districts, that only started in 2013, almost without any, you know, bump in the road all the way going back to the 1930s. It was just that you need a set number of signatures from the whole state, and that was considered enough. Those are the basic rules we've had. And then with the 18 district rule, those were the rules that were in place up until a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm. And 18 districts is about half of the districts in the state.
Yeah, just over half.
Yeah. So what was the new law that made it even more restrictive?
Well, the new law, a couple months ago, the legislature came around and specifically a couple, actually North Idaho legislators came around and said, well, this 18 district rule is, we think, is too easy. So they, even though hardly any initiatives ever qualified under the 18 district rule. In fact, only two ever made it on the ballot since 2013 under the new rule. But they claimed that it was far too easy and that you needed to restrict the process more. And we could get into their reasons for doing so, but there are other reasons for doing so. But so what they proposed was a bill called Senate Bill 1110. That would require signatures from 6% of voters, not just in 18 districts, but in every single district in the state, which is 35 districts. That is a more restrictive rule than any of the states in the country that have ballot initiatives. There's not a single other state in the country that requires a high number of signatures from every single state legislative district. And of course, probably the reason why no other state did it is because it gives veto power to any one district. So you could get, under this new law, you could get signatures from all 34 districts, but then if you don't get enough in just one district, you can your whole ballot initiative fails. But our Idaho legislature enacted this very extreme set of rules that became law back in April when the governor signed it. Nearly every single Republican in the Idaho legislature voted for it, including locally Representatives Heather Scott and Sage Dixon voted for it. Senator Jim Woodward was one of the only Republicans in the entire Idaho legislature who voted against it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the law that the legislature passed, made it much more difficult to get an initiative on the ballot. And you challenged that in court. It went to the Supreme Court, and this is a ruling that just came down. Why don't you tell us what that is?
Well, yeah, about 16 weeks ago, they enacted that bill into law. It became law. And then about 13 weeks ago, we filed a lawsuit in the court against it. And then earlier this week, the court ruled and struck down that new law. So the Supreme Court, in a unanimous ruling, all five justices ruled that this new restrictive 35 district rule is unconstitutional. And they not only ruled that it was unconstitutional, and they not only struck it down, they also recognized for the first time in Idaho history that the initiative process is a fundamental right of the people of Idaho, and that this new legislation enacted just a few months ago was really direct a direct assault on a fundamental right of the people of Idaho. Almost like if, you know, if the legislature really went after the Second Amendment or, you know, the First Amendment. It was the court viewed it in terms very similar to that, and they struck it down.
Mm-hmm. One of the arguments that I saw made, it was House Speaker Scott Bedke, after the ruling, he naturally said he was disappointed. But what he said, it was quoted in the Idaho Statesman saying, he said the law would have increased voter involvement, especially in the corners of the state, too often forgotten by some. Speaking of, you know, the more rural districts, was that kind of the rationale of the decision to pass this new law?
Well, I'll tell you what I firmly believe, and I know a lot of people agree with me on this, including it looks like the court also has this view. That was the rationale that they claimed motivated them, that they were trying, that these legislators were trying to involve more voters. They were trying to involve rural voters and include them in the process. It's pretty clear that what they were really trying to do was make it nearly impossible to use the initiative process. And in that respect, they weren't really doing anything to include rural voters. They were really doing the opposite, because if no initiative can make the ballot, that actually takes power away from all voters, whether you're urban voter, rural voter, it doesn't matter. If no initiatives make the ballot, then everyone loses their power. And that's what the court basically recognized in its ruling. And it's a shame to hear, you know, legislators like Speaker Bedke continue to lean on that as a justification. I mean, they know the history. They understand, for example, that Medicaid expansion, the only successful initiative in recent years, actually started in rural Idaho. It's you know, our first event ever was in Sagal. And then we had events in Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry, and then we made our way south and built a campaign all across the state. There's really no evidence from our history that you have successful initiatives that are only based in the cities and that don't include, you know, rural Idahoans.
Mm-hmm. And as the current law stands, you have to get that 6% in 18 different districts. We don't have that many urban districts.
Well, yeah. What the one thing the court recognized, so the legislators were saying, like, and I recall Representative Sage Dixon, other legislators in the past, they would pass around a map showing that technically you could pull 18 districts out of just four counties, and those are the four most populous counties in Idaho: Ada County, Canyon County, Bonneville County, and Kootenai County. Well, the court came along and said, "Look, those four counties aren't, you know, completely urban metropolitan counties. Even the biggest county in Idaho, Ada County, where Boise is, has a huge part of it that's all rural. It's all farmland, and it has rural communities in it. And then you go to Canyon County, and that's even more so. And beyond that, you look at the communities of Bonneville County, like where Idaho Falls is, or Kootenai County and Coeur d'Alene and Hayden and Post Falls. If you compare all those different counties, they're very diverse political communities. They're very different than one another. They have different views of things. So to present them all as some kind of urban metropolis or something is just not true. And the court recognized that, and that was a big relief.
Okay, so that's the big news that happened. The initiative process has restored the same process that's been in place now since 2013. But let's back up a little bit. Tell us more about who and what Reclaim Idaho is.
Well, Reclaim Idaho got going originally even before the Medicaid expansion campaign. we started, those of us who would eventually go on to start Reclaim Idaho, started in Sandpoint organizing locally where we grew up. Those of us who started it grew up in Sandpoint area, and we just wanted to pass the local school levy, and that was our whole goal. And we were successful in that effort, and, you know, not only did the levy pass, but we were able to get a whole lot of people to come out and knock on doors and get really engaged and, you know, convince their neighbors to vote for the levy. And beyond that, we found that we were able to bring in a lot of people who didn't have the same political views. They maybe disagreed with each other on some other issues, and maybe they didn't belong to the same party, but they were still willing to work together on some big issues. And that's what really inspired us to start Reclaim Idaho and to try to really build a statewide grassroots organization of people who, you know, maybe they don't share everything in common, but what they do share in common is they want government to respond to the needs and interests of all Idahoans, and not just those with the most political influence or the most wealth, the most money, but really respond to the basic needs of ordinary people and everyone around the state. We were especially concerned with the way that the Idaho legislature and government refused to expand Medicaid for 6 straight years. And we thought, wow, that issue is similar in its urgency at the state level to what how badly that levy was needed at the local level that we were originally working on. So that's what led us to really start that Medicaid expansion campaign. And we could talk more about this, but now our latest campaign, after the Medicaid expansion campaign succeeded, our latest campaign is to go back to the education funding issue and organize and put an initiative on the ballot to increase K-12 education funding by over $300 million a year, so that we can get, you know, more competitive salaries for teachers, and so that we can get stronger programs and things like career technical education, full-day kindergarten, and other really urgently needed programs that are going to give our young people a better chance to succeed.
And that's a good segue, because we did want to talk about that. So the Quality Education Initiative, I think is what you're calling it, you're pursuing that right now, which is to get this legislation, the proposed legislation, placed on the ballot.
That's right. So even while we were awaiting this court decision, hundreds of volunteers around the state over the last couple of months kicked things into gear and started collecting signatures for the Quality Education Act. And we've already got over 9,000 signatures. We have until May 1st of 2022 to get to our 65,000. And we're launching a tour right now and going all around the state and meeting with local teams of volunteers to promote the initiative and to go out and collect signatures. So we're really excited to be in Sandpoint on Saturday. We're going to meet at 10 a.m. at Matchwood Brewing Company, and then we're going to go out and collect some signatures that day. So I'm excited to come back home to my hometown for the first time, I think, since COVID broke out, and meet with some good people and go out and promote the Quality Education Act.
Mm-hmm. So Idaho's per student spending on education is among the very lowest in the country. I don't know what it's currently ranked at, but it has actually been 50th out of the 50 states on a number of recent years. And this would, the Quality Education Act would require the state to spend more money on education. But the question would probably arise for most people, where would that money come from?
Right. That's a really important question. And that is one of the strengths of our initiative, is that we've come up with a way to increase funding for education that is very reasonable and very modest in its approach. We are not touching property taxes, so no new property taxes in this initiative, and no new taxes on anyone making under $250,000 a year. So the two changes to the tax code in this initiative that will fund the $300 million a year will be, number one, restoring the corporate income rate to what it used to be. So no big new rate, just bring it back to what it was before it was cut several times. And this is not, by the way, on your average small business. This is mainly on your large corporations, the corporate rate. That's number one. And then number two, the initiative includes a very modest tax increase on individuals earning over $250,000 a year, or if you're a married couple, over $500,000 a year, so that's $500,000. And even that tax increase is very modest, because there are no, if you make over $500,000 a year as a married couple, this initiative will include no new taxes on your first $500,000. There's just a new tax rate on what you'll earn over on the money that you make above $500,000.
Okay. Well, Luke, we only have a couple more minutes left, but we'll throw that out again. As this airs, your door-knocking event starts at 10 a.m. at Matchwood Brewing on Oak Street there. That's this Saturday, September 4th, and anybody can just show up, right, that wants to take part in that?
That's right. You can show up. You can also show up to sign the initiative, but we encourage you to show up, hear more about it, and get involved, because this is our chance. Now that our initiative rights were restored by this Supreme Court ruling, now is our chance to go out and exercise them and really use this great citizen initiative process that we have in our state.
So one more question before we sign off here. Do you expect the legislature to take another run or another try at making the initiative process more restrictive?
I don't, actually. I mean, it's possible that legislators could propose legislation. It's very difficult to see any new legislation being enacted, and that's for very important reasons, not because they don't want to. Undoubtedly, legislators will still want to make it much harder to get initiatives on the ballot. But the reason why they won't be able to is because the court has ruled that the initiative process is a fundamental right, and therefore any new legislation has to pass extremely high barriers of scrutiny by the court in order to not be struck down. So the court has basically put initiative rights, as I mentioned before, on a similar level as something like, you know, Second Amendment or First Amendment rights, where it's very difficult to restrict those rights. And that's a great thing for the people of Idaho. That's something that should be celebrated. Even if maybe you don't agree with the various, you know, initiatives of Reclaim Idaho, this is something to be celebrated, because it means that our initiative rights are here to stay for generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gives the citizens their direct means of letting other citizens decide if a law merits being passed. So, Luke Mayville, Reclaim Idaho, I want to say thank you for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you so much, Chris. As always, it's great to be with you.